This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 26th, episode 2255, brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, horse world.
Ready for a start. They're off in the 150th run. Happy Travers, looking at Bikinis, took a bad stumble coming out of the gate. It will be Tacitus right up and on the pace today. Mucho Gusto is going with him and Tax on the outside. So it's these three that will take them to that first turn. And Highest Honors is away running in fourth. And then on the inside is Owen Dale in fifth. Looking at Bikinis, who stumbled at the start, is sixth early on, ahead of Everfast and Scars Are Cool on the outside. Then Code of Honor tucked in at the rail. After that comes Chess Chief, who is second last onto the backstretch. The two trailers are Laughing Fox and Endorsed. A 23.11 opening quarter mile. The pace is fast, and Joe Talamo takes the lead with Mucho Gusto onto the backstretch. And Tex and Tacitus are right behind together, second and third. Highest Honors in behind them, then looking at Bikinis, Owen Dale on the inside is five lengths off the lead, and then Scars Are Cool and Everfast. Code of Honor travels smoothly behind them, eight lengths to make up at this stage, Chess Chief, Laughing Fox, and Endorsed. 47.26 was the half mile for Mucho Gusto, who's been joined by Tacitus from the rail. And now the two of them are side by side as they head to the half mile pole. And Tax is just off of them as Tacitus pokes his neck in front, moving for the far turn. And then it's Highest Honors on the outside of Owen Dale. Break of another 2.5. Then Scars Are Cool and Everfast on the inside. Around the far turn, it is Tacitus in front. On the outside is Mucho Gusto. Tax is a length and a half off of them. Highest Honors is next, and Code of Honor is now making his move. And he's closing on the outside. Tacitus has been put to a full-out drive. Mucho Gusto. Code of Honor is gaining ground on the far outside. Endorsed is coming down the center. Owen Dale and Highest Honors too. They're into the final furlong. Code of Honor, Mucho Gusto, and Tacitus. Code of Honor has taken the lead, and Code of Honor and John Velasquez have won the run. Happy Travers. Tacitus was second, and then it was Mucho Gusto.
And in the world of horse racing, thank God I didn't bet.
Yeah, me too.
I had Tax and Tacitus, so I had a second place. Now, I do believe you had...
Nobody. So if you heard the beginning of the race, he said, oh, looking at Bikini stumbles on the way out. Well, that's who I had picked to win and was pretty much out of the race from the start. So there you go.
Didn't you do Looking at Bikinis and Scars Are Cool?
Yes. And also Laughing Fox, which, none of them did very well.
I think Code of Honor was my third pick, but I would have lost in the trifecta. So good thing I didn't bet.
We didn't do so well this time.
No.
But I figured Looking at Bikinis was looking around Pretty Girls when he was supposed to be running. So
trying to find the hot ladies.
Oh, well.
Hey, we have no producer today, so it is just Glenn and I. So I'll tell you what's on today's show. We're going to have Mighty Blue is coming on. I had a heck of a weekend. And then we've also got our new Leslie / Kristen, and her name is Deanne, and she's going to come on and talk to us. And she's the new editor. Yeah, exactly. The new editor of horsenation.com.
Yeah, so we're excited to meet her. And of course, my friend Mighty Blue, many of our listeners follow. So we're going to talk a lot about him coming up. But first, it is some birthday Daily Winnie time.
You gave it away.
It's kind of a special one.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy, happy birthday to you.
I have a very happy birthday to a very special 3-year-old. Her name is Eris. Happy birthday and hello to her mom, Serenity, as well. Apparently, Serenity and Eris listen to our show together every day. So happy birthday to her.
Happy birthday! Happy birthday! I would like to give my daily money to one of our listeners. His name is Zach Rizzoldi, and Zach sent me a gift in the mail, and it's fantastic. It's a coffee mug, and it has three squares on it, and you're supposed to like check. It's like a check yes or no kind of coffee mug, and it says single, and that's left blank, and then taken, and that's left blank, and checked off as mentally dating Zeus. I don't know where you got it. It's awesome. It's awesome. So thank you very much. I feel like I am mentally dating Zeus funny. For sure. Cause he's like all I think about. And that's all I think about is trying to make sure he hasn't escaped.
That's funny. Well, you had quite a weekend. At the end of Friday's show, you announced that you were taking Baby Groot, who is going to be your thoroughbred makeover horse in less than 2 months, I might add, at the Kentucky Horse Park. And you were taking him to the fair.
It's like 5 weeks until the makeover. So I really have to cram all the events to take him to as quick as I can. I mean, it's like crunch time. So I took him to the county fair to a little, it was a horse show at the county fair, and it was free. So, you know, free horse show. It's in an indoor arena, which he really hasn't been in before. And I didn't really know what to expect. It was in downtown Norman. So I'm driving to like where Lucas takes karate, and there's just like a random building off to the side, and there's a you know, people selling vegetables, and then the indoor arena, and so there's all these trailers parked. And the first
was it a county fair? I mean, did they have like Ferris wheels? And
no, this was actually it's precluding the fair. So thank God I didn't have to walk them under a tilt-a-whirl or something.
I really wanted that. I really wanted.
I was really really nervous about that. So we unloaded.
So
in
we don't
a gravel...
know if he likes funnel cake or not.
No, we don't know. We didn't get to try the funnel cake. I'm sure they were selling it because there was a lot of vendors out there, but we didn't take a walk through there. I took him out, unloaded him, and like at the side of a busy road, I unload him, and he gets out of the trailer like, you know, like snorty and all that. But I got to tell you, he calmed down fairly quickly. I think it was in that vein of like there was so much that he just kind of closed.
That
in
is
on
a thing
feet.
We've determined that helps.
Yeah. So, well, I was going to compete him, and I signed him up for all the English classes because there's only a couple English classes. And then guess what? The rest are Western. So I took him in the indoor, and I mean, took him in, you know, he's kind of dancing sideways. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to hurt some children. You know? And I look around and it's all children with like little ponies and pigtails. And they were all so stinking cute. And I go in and he actually calmed down fairly quickly. And there was bleachers on the sides and the stabling, I thought it was funny, is a hitching post that is right outside the arena.
Well, it is
and
Oklahoma.
So there's no stabling. There's just a hitching post. And so there's horses tied right next to the arena. And so I walk through the concrete, go in the building. It sounds like an airplane hangar with like an F-16 running because there's fans everywhere. So it's like, you can't even talk to anybody in this place. It's just super loud. Oh, fans roaring everywhere. So it was nice and cool. But I started warming up, and I just realized they're all like little girls with ponies and pigtails, and they're like jumping around. And I just thought, I can't compete against these people. Like, I wouldn't really beat down some little like 8-year-old or 6-year-old or something on some pony. I'd be like the worst human in the world. These people have been practicing for the show for months, probably, and they're like, the fair. And
I
here's
like
me.
That you were like, confident you were going to beat the children.
I probably wouldn't have, but I wasn't going to take a chance. And especially one of the little girls comes up to me and she smiles and she's like missing her front teeth and she's got little pigtails and she's got a little hunter outfit on and she's like, good luck. And I was like, oh God, I'm out of here. So I basically rode him around in warm up and I was like, hey, here's my number. We're going to take off. So I handed back over my number and left. Cause I
scared the children were going to beat you. Be honest.
That's probably true. But I didn't want to take the chance of like, you know, beating a little kid and a cute little pony. And I don't know. I didn't feel like
you
it
go
was
with
right.
That. We'll join you.
Okay, thanks. And then the next day, yesterday, I took him to a one-day horse trial. So it was about an hour and a half away, which is, for those who have been following the trailer saga of Baby Groot, that is the longest ride we've taken. And he did good. He was great. I got some of those kicking rings or pawing rings my farrier made me, and their little metal bracelets that go around. What Groot would do is he would get in the trailer, and once I taught him to load, he would load, but then he would get in there and you'd close him up and he would go crazy, like pawing and striking.
Beating the walls.
Beating the walls just with his front feet. And so I got these rings made. They're like little metal rings, and I put them, they're like little bracelets, and they just sit there and they don't do anything until they paw, and then they ding him in the coronary band. You know, it's uncomfortable. And he didn't paw. He didn't strike. He didn't do anything. He did once. And then he was like, that sucked. And so he stood in the trailer the whole way there and back. No problem. So if anybody needs some of these, my farrier makes them and they're awesome. So we get to an hour and a half trailer ride. We get to this place, which is in a field. This is just a field. And they've got like a roped off electric tape for show jump and a little area for dressage and a little area for warm up. And then the rest of it is cross country course, but it's actually along the freeway, along I-40. So when you're fence number 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 were all in a row directly adjacent to I-40, the freeway, like with trucks and trailers and chicken trucks and all sorts of stuff going by. So there was a lot of environment. He went in and did he unloaded, and he actually kind of like was snorty, and then he calmed down. I'm super proud of him because this is like big boy stuff. And he traveled all the way there, unloaded, was a little snorty, and then went into stall. I walked him around. He was fine. And then I did dressage, and that's the first time we've cantered in a dressage test. Poor guy. Like, that's really hard for a 4-year-old to canter in a 20-meter circle. And he got both his leads. And then we went out and did show jumping. And then you did show jumping and you went directly out to cross country. So we do our show jumping. And I did starter, which I thought would be like 18 inches. And it's 2'3". So we weren't quite ready for that height yet, especially colored poles and all sorts of environment and people standing around with their horses and directly next to the warm up. And so it was a little hectic, but he got out and we just trotted everything. And that dude can ping over 2'3" from a trot, no problem. So he goes out and he went clean on stadium, didn't knock down a fence. And then we went out to cross country and I put him in the start box, which they have as like PVC poles that are like propped up against a tree. They went through and I was like, hey, count me down. And he was like, okay, go. I was like, okay, so we're off. So I took him out, and in an effort to just school him, I just trotted him over the jumps and let him canter on. We cantered a couple of them. He hasn't really cantered fences before. So if he had like a nice canter going up to it, I let him jump it. And then we got down to the water area, and we didn't have to go through the water. So I went through my little flag, and then I went around to try to school him through the water. And he was like, no, I'm not doing that. So the lady that was kind of jump judging, she was like, you can come back later and try it afterwards. And I was like, okay, cool. So we canter off and do the rest of our jumps, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15 jumps. And along the freeway, he was amazing. I couldn't believe the focus of this 4-year-old. He's starting to figure it out. And we get back and we come across the finish line and everything is awesome. And I'm like, yay, good boy. And I wait, and then everybody finishes and I go out and I school the water, and I get a little girl and a little pony with pigtails to lead me through the water. And by the end, we're cantering through the water and everything's awesome. And I go all the way back and I put him in the stall and I go up to get my ribbon. I'm going to get a ribbon. And next to my name is a big old fat E.
You were off course?
What? I go, what do you mean? Why is there an E next to my name? You were eliminated. I know what the E means. But why?
I've gotten them before.
Why was I eliminated? I don't understand. How am I eliminated? They're like, you didn't jump fence 8. What? What do you mean I didn't jump fence 8? So it's a 1-day horse trial. And so you get there, and you know, when you're running cross country, you usually walk your course 2 or 3 times. Well, there's not time for that. You get there, you had to put them up, and I'm like trying to figure out where the jump course is. And I looked at the cross country course and I walked cross country course, but I kind of had to like do it really quick. And I'm like, and apparently I just missed fence 8. So just like, Buck Davidson at Poe, he also was eliminated because he missed a fence and he had traveled all the way to France. So I do not feel
bad. Yeah, you only drove an hour.
I only drove an hour. And so, yeah, big fat elimination for Jamie.
Yeah, but
and
you got to
Kurt.
Do it all, right? So,
yeah, to be fair, it was fine. It was such a good experience.
I'm not even going to give you that girl a loser.
Really?
No, I think that was great. You didn't die. You didn't fall off.
I knew you were. I just thought you were going to crush me for forgetting
no,
fence. And apparently, fence
off.
8.
I don't know how any of you remember where the fences are. So.
Well, apparently, fence 8 is, I mean, like 20 feet behind fence number 7. So as she's like, you actually jumped number 7 and made a hard right to avoid fence 8 and then galloped to fence 9.
And what was sad is fence 8 was probably easy. Well, it wasn't even a difficult one.
Yeah, it was a little roll top. No yeah. problem.
And roll tops, they never had trouble with roll tops.
So for those of us who get an elimination without even knowing it, or those of you who forget a fence, or those of you who do stupid stuff, it just can happen to everybody.
So and obviously jumping is his strong point. And dressage, any, you know, are we?
Well, we cantered, and he didn't buck me off, his canter is getting stronger and better, and I'm getting nicer about asking it. I think the reason he bucked me off is because I was mad at him, you know, for, like, not trying. So that was a while ago, so I really feel like I think this horse has a lot of talent, to be honest. I think he's really, really come a long way, and I just love the fact that people go, wow, he's really good for 4. He's so good for 4, and finally, one person says to me in front of all the people that are like, wow, he's so good for 4. I can't believe he comes out here and he just does all this and he's 4 years old. That's so cool. And finally somebody goes, hey, good job, trainer. Way to teach your horse to come out here and do good.
Wow.
I was like, thank you, because he did not start that way.
Was that your husband? Was that Chad that said that?
It was Chad. No, no, it was just another lady that's kind of followed along our journey. But it is funny because when I was at the county fair, random person, and if you're listening, thank you. She's like, oh, it's that baby Groot. I was like, yes, random stranger, thank you. Yes, it is baby Groot. She's like, oh, good luck. Like, oh, somebody, I can't hide.
No, there was no
discerning markings. There was no sign with our name on it. There was no nothing. It was just, they just knew it was baby Groot. So even at the county fair in Norman, Oklahoma, people know the story.
We do have listeners in Oklahoma, apparently.
But there's like 2. Yeah. So thanks, you guys. And one was at the fair.
Oh, you're going to find a lot of listeners when you head to Kentucky.
No pressure
there.
I'm going to hide from all of them. So we go, we have that Saturday with the county fair, and then Sunday we trailer for an hour and a half, do dressage, do stadium, do cross country, trailer, and then school afterwards, and trailer an hour and a half back. I was like, dude, you are going to sleep good. Last night I went out to check on everybody, and Groot has pawed the round bale to where there's like a huge bed of hay, and he is out, flat out. I mean, I walked out in the field. He didn't move.
Hard.
I was like, oh my God, is he dead? It was like one of those, like, is he dead? Hello?
He's going to be Hello? A little stiff today.
Wait for the ear twitch to like, oh yeah, he's alive. Okay, cool. but yeah, I was really proud of him. And so I.
Good job, trainer.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I got to say that I have signed up for the freestyle at the makeover, and I'm also signed up for the eventing, but I'm going to be very fair with him, and you know, he, like I said, he is 4.
Wait a minute. I have an idea. He was really good on the freeway. Let's just bring a bunch of cars and trucks in and drive around while he's weaving in and out of them. I don't think that's ever been done.
That's definitely never happened in the makeover. Just get a backfiring semi
exactly.
out there.
That's right. We'll get Lisa to come down. Lisa Kelly, Ice Road Trucker. She can bring her truck down. We can put a couple pickup trucks in there. Maybe a Mini Cooper, you know.
Honestly, don't bring a pony in there.
A police
those
car.
Are pretty
That'd
scary.
Be perfect. With the lights and sirens going, you're guaranteed to win.
That's true.
No matter what he does.
but the point is, I think that we are signed up for the beginner novice eventing, and there is a very good chance that he will not be ready for that. So we will play it by ear, as much as I, eventing is my favorite thing to do in the world. if he's not ready to, I mean, beginner novice, you can't drop beginner novice fences. So we will, we'll just kind of play it by ear. When we get there, we may have to scratch, and I don't want to hear anything from you. I've already heard it from my husband, but I, you know, as a good steward,
I could quote exactly your husband's words.
Let's hear. Let's see if you get it right.
He said, "You mean you've done all of this? We got two horses that you're going to go to this makeover, and now we're going to spend all this money and drive all the way out there to Kentucky, and then you're not going to compete?" Was that close?
That is not what he said.
Oh.
But that's what I thought he was going to say. He's like, "Well, Groot is a very good jumper, and that is what he's best at, and it would be a shame for you not to show that off, but you're the trainer."
Oh, no, but he was thinking what I said the whole time.
Of course he was. Of course he was.
Yeah, that was like very chicken? Well done, Chad.
Chicken? You remember, he has to stay married to me. So
you don't want to sleep on the couch for the next 3 months.
Exactly. Well, I just really think that he's best at jumping, and I think you should show it up. Yeah, but we haven't cantered jumps, and these are two 6, and I don't know. We'll
like
see how far we get.
True military officer in fine form. Good job, Chad. See, I'm not that delicate.
He's a good husband. Yeah. Easy, husband. Well, hey, I have some weird news stories.
Hey,
I also have first world problems, and we also have a guest coming on. So, what do you want to do?
Well, let's get to all of that. I want to give some love. Speaking of equestrians who've traveled a long way, and I want to cover a little bit about the European Championships and give some love to our friends over there and all our listeners over there. But part of covering the European Championships is our loser of the week. So let's start with that, and then we'll start with the losers and lead into the winners, okay?
This is my loser of the week. I requested this.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Yes, and the loser, I can't call them my people. They're not my people. They're vegans, and they're crazy vegans. Do you remember when I went to Veganuary the first time I did it, and they were like, "Hey, let's see pictures."
You went to a conference, or was it a food festival or something?
Yeah, I did, but that was a bust. But this was a like a photo contest. Like, "Hey, let's see all you vegans. Submit a photo of yourself."
Yeah, that's right.
And I submitted a photo of myself jumping Jet, my rescue horse. And I was like, "Here's Jet. And he's jumping a big fence. And he's a rescue horse. And I'm a vegan." And they wrote me back, "Yeah, we can't post that."
No.
I said, "Well, why not?" "Because you're using a horse in it for, and you're making it do things." I was like, "What?" That's the only thing he likes to do. But that's when I was like, "I'm officially not going to be a part of your vegan lifestyle because you think that riding horses is cruel." Like, basically, they were accusing me of cruelty riding a horse. Well, this weekend, a couple of them, vegans, decided to strip down to their bras, paint on their body basically how horrible horse people are. And what did some of the things on their body say? Something about, making a horse into slavery something?
Yeah, horse slavery. I was, I watched the video. This was at the European Championships.
So basically this guy's out doing a Grand Prix show jumping course, and these chicks in bras, I think there's a guy too, ran out with this stiff holding up signs in the middle of his show jumping round, and suck it, he went clear.
I know. I got to give him credit. His name is Mark Hotziger, something like that. And he did well. He rode it clean. So.
Yeah. And he's on this beautiful bay horse riding around, and he goes out and just kills it. And what sucks is that they kind of gently corralled these crazy vegans. I don't even like to call them vegans. They're just like,
if this was a football match or a football game, they would have tackled.
That's what I wanted. I was like, "Get her!" And they just kind of grab her and pull her off like, "You idiot." But I wanted them to like slide tackle her,
I wonder if he thought about just going her direction. Do you think?
He didn't even really lose focus.
No, you couldn't tell whether he even looked at him.
So. Like the first one runs out when he's jumping the triple and runs out and then he has a triple, and then he has like three strides to another one. It was insane. It was so stupid. I mean, you're going to get yourself killed all because of, horse slavery.
Well,
I'm going to tell
done,
you
Mark.
something. If these horses don't want to jump, they won't jump.
No.
How many of us have trouble getting a horse to jump a 2-foot fence, okay? These horses will not jump if they don't want to.
I always said that about our draft horses, too. You know, if they didn't want to do anything, they wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't.
You're not going to make a 2,000-pound draft horse do anything.
No.
They want to do. And the fact that they even stayed in their fencing was, you know, the draft horses could lean on it and knock the whole thing over. I never understood why they stayed in their fencing. I you know, because they really like to have a job and do things.
Yeah.
Well, there were some people who did very well at the European Championships. Isabel Wirth defended her freestyle dressage title, to nobody's surprise, to gain her third gold medal. She led the German team to a clean sweep and throughout the whole of dressage. Judges awarded Wirth a score of 90.875, which is amazing. And it saw her... It means that she won her 9th individual gold medal of her career at the European Championships.
Wow. That's insane.
9-time European champion. Switzerland's Martin Fuchs and his horse, Clooney 51, secured an individual gold medal, and he won in the show jumping championship, so good for him. Britain also secured its place at the Tokyo Olympics with the show jumping team with a bronze medal finish. I didn't realize they hadn't qualified. You know, they came off a winning wagon. I didn't realize that. So, we love the para riders, and there was a girl that has the most beautiful smile in the world. She's from Britain, Great Britain, and her name is Georgia Wilson, and she was crowned para dressage European champion in grade 2, having won the gold freestyle with her 10-year-old British bred mare, Midnight. She's 23 years old, and this was her first championship, and she ended up with a 78.19 in the individual test. So good for her, and she had the most beautiful smile. She was so excited. I guess you go to your first championship and win. That's cause for excitement. So good job to all of them, and now the eventing starts. So they'll be doing the eventing over the next, over this week.
Cool. That's amazing.
And, you know, when you're talking European championships, you're really talking the best in the world for all of these disciplines. So,
it's hard to argue with that.
You can't argue with that. Well, now, did Omega Alpha Equine come into play over the weekend at all?
Omega Alpha Equine. Well, I have a supply of Equine Chill Ultra that I'm going to take to the makeover. I'm saving up that to, like, this makeover is just, it's just getting more and more top of mind.
Is that a 2-day drive for you with the horse?
So I'm going to leave on, let's see here, Sunday the 29th and arrive on the of September 29th and arrive on the 30th. The barn opens around noon. So I'm going to drive to Nashville area and stay at a horse hotel. And then hopefully he'll load back in the trailer after 8 hours, 9 hours. And then the 30th, Chad is not coming. Chad might fly in the end of it. So my friend Larissa is crazy enough to drive with me. And so we're arriving on the 30th, and then afternoon it all opens, and then you can school on Tuesday the 1st, and then the competition starts on the 2nd and the 3rd of October. So October 2nd is eventing and freestyle, and then the 3rd is also freestyle. So hopefully they'll split me up a little bit for both of those. And then the 4th is dark. They're tallying scores, and there's a bunch of different things you can go watch. And then the 5th is the I'll just be packing on the 5th, but the 5th is the night where they have the finals and stuff.
And we will be there. Jennifer and I will be there. Joy, your co-host for Retired Resource Radio, will be there. We're coming to support, and I know a lot of our listeners are probably planning on coming too.
You're not coming to support me. Don't you lie. You're coming to pick on me. You're coming to make fun of me.
I will not. Well, maybe a little. Chad won't be there. I have to represent both of us.
I know. Hopefully he's going to try to come by third Wednesday or Thursday, but we'll see. And then we'll just to stay home for school.
We'll be doing shows from there. We'll be doing Horses in the Morning from there. You'll be doing some Retired Racehorse Radio. So we will be providing coverage. And we're also going to try and plan up a meetup one night too. So for listeners that are there or live in the Lexington area, which I know we have quite a few, we're going to try and get together so you can plan on that. But anyway, back to Mega Alpha.
Oh, Omega Alpha Equine. So yes, I am trying to, I was like, how do we get on that topic? I'm following very carefully what Dr. Chang said to me, because when you're going to the makeover, one of the first things they do is you arrive and you go pick up your packet and they call you to inspect your horse. And they make you walk and they check your horse's body score, which has been really a big cause of stress, the makeover trainers, because it's hard to put weight on these guys, especially so close to being off the track. And they have to have a body score condition of at least 4. And I'm feeling like Groot is going to stress himself out on a trailer ride. So I want him to have some extra weight on him, which is why we talked to Dr. Chang last time about keeping weight, getting weight on a thoroughbred. And the first thing he said to start out with was the biotic gait. And that just gets a regular kind of gut motility and puts all the good stuff, the good and the good bacteria into their GI tract. And so after that, we'll then go to Regenerec, which I already have in the wings. So I've been doing some major shopping at Omega Alpha. But that to me, like, everything is herbal. You're not putting a bunch of drugs in your horse. You're putting a bunch of herbs in your horse that work. They're proven to work. We're not making this stuff up. I mean, there's a lot. There's millions of years of Chinese medicine. I guess not millions. Thousands of years of Chinese medicine that tells you these things actually work. So he's on biotic aid now, and I already see a difference. I just feel like he's kind of flourishing a little bit. And then once we do that, then we'll go to the Regenerec. But for now, biotic aid twice a day. And like I said, I really feel like he's holding his weight, and we're gonna pass that body score test of 4. We're trying anyway. He's kind of a thin kind of dude.
How tall is he, by the way?
Well, I got him. He was 16 hands, and I was like, 16 hands is perfect. That's the perfect height for me. Now he's almost 16.3. It's not okay. It's too big. And Drax, the other one I got last February or March, he's now officially 16.3. I'm like, what the heck? But his butt is 17.1. So hopefully he'll even up a little bit. You know, he's still got some growing to do. So they're both getting a little too big and too healthy. I need to cut back on the healthy food. Malnourish them a little bit.
Well, there's somebody right now that's thankfully eating some healthy food again. And because we don't have a producer, I'm going to call him live on the air here. He's a good friend of mine. Many of you know him. And we're going to see if we can get him on to talk about an accomplishment that he just did that very few of us won't. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know you're in recovery mode here. Let me introduce you. We have Steve Adams on here. He's Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail. He has a podcast that he's been doing for a couple of years that I listen to every week. And I know a ton of our listeners listen to as well, since you came on a couple of years ago. Steve just completed his second hike of the Appalachian Trail, this time at the age of 66. Steve, first of all, congratulations. Well done. You just finished on Friday. Did I hear you say this makes you the oldest person to finish it twice?
Actually, I didn't say that, but it makes me the 16th person to do 2 completed through hikes in their 60s.
Wow.
I don't know who was the oldest to do it twice. That's interesting. I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, congratulations. It doesn't matter. It's an amazing accomplishment. We're talking almost 2,200 miles, right?
Yeah, 2,192. Yeah, they extended it by 7 miles from my first time, and I felt those 7 miles.
So your first time, you were 64 years
61.
Old? 61.
No, 61, yeah.
So you're 5 years later. What difference did that 5 years make?
I think it was... with about 400 or 500 miles to go, I was thinking that the extra 5 years really hurt me. But in fact, I got stronger and stronger as time went on, because I didn't lose as much weight this time, even though I lost a lot. But I was really strong towards the end, and I felt great. I feel great now. My knees are a bit creaky when I stand up at the moment, but you know, they're fine. They were fine when I was hiking. It was just a case of continuing to hike every single day, and they worked out.
There are 3 legs to the hiking Triple Crown, and the Pacific Crest Trail, and then the, what's the one in the middle?
The Continental Divide Trail.
And there, I saw some quotes from some hikers who were had done those two and were doing the AT last, were doing the Appalachian Trail last, and they all said, this trail sucks, because out west, they're doing switchbacks to get up the mountains. So they're gradually going up the mountains in switchbacks, and they're all complaining about the mountains on the AT, because you pretty much go straight up and straight down. So it's interesting that we think about the mountains out west, the Rockies and things, as being the tough ones, and they're all saying, no, this is a tough hike.
Well, the interesting difference is the AT takes longer than the others, even though it's shorter than the others, because there are rocks and roots to contend with, and they really bog you down. The for example, the PCT can be ridden, you know, you can, as we're on horses in the morning, can be a horse could ride it. So it's nicely graded. There are no real rocks and roots to go over. The AT is all rocks and roots.
Yeah, I heard your, and by the way, congratulations also to, you did a feat by continuing to do your podcast the entire time, recording every day. We all know, Jamie knows how hard it is for us to get on the air here every day, let alone hiking 20 miles a day and then getting on the air. Congratulations for that.
Thank you. It became logistically difficult, but you know, one thing I'd like to think, and one of the reasons I finished was because I'm just determined, and I was determined to give a complete story if I could, and so I was determined to complete the hike as well.
Well,
I ask some personal questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Steve, are you married?
I was. I've been married, and my wife and I separated last year. I didn't tell everybody that at the time, but she's still been supportive of me on the trail, and we're happily not married.
Okay. I was going to say, like, what does your spouse or your partner feel about you taking off and hiking all of these long miles and being gone so long?
Yeah, she was more appropriate, I guess, for the first hike, because she was nervous, but she wasn't the sort of person to stop me doing anything like that. And before we split last year, I'd already decided I wanted to do the Camino de Santiago in Spain, which I did in October with my niece. And then I also told her I was going to do the Appalachian Trail again for a second time. And she was supportive of that, and that was nothing to do with the split at all. And she's one of these people who says, you know, whatever you want to do, I will support you in making your dreams come true.
That's amazing. She just knew she married a crazy person. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, let's clear that up straight away.
All right, as long as you went into it with eyes open. Okay, gotcha. Well, I think it's just an amazing feat what you've been able to accomplish. What would you say to other people who have a crazy dream that they feel like they might not get that kind of support?
I actually think that kind of support, the spousal support or a friend or somebody supporting at home, is critical to the success for a lot of us on the trail. You know, I can't imagine anything worse than worrying that your spouse is worrying about you at home and wants you to stop. And some people were getting messages from their husbands and their wives to stop. You know, I don't know, you probably know we had a murder on the trail this year, which was awful. And that caused a number of people to quit the trail because, you know, if you've got a daughter out there or a son out there or father or mother or any of those people out there, you're going to worry about them anyway. But the fact that a murder happens, you know, it makes you even more worried. So I think the support is critical to the success of people's hikes.
Well, and you're out there for how long did this one take you? Five and a half, 6 months?
Well, the first one took me 6 months and a week. This one took me about 3 days, less than 6 months. So I did it faster this time than last time.
Huh. Do you think having the experience doing it this I know what you've said on the show and what I've heard a lot of your guests say is that going into a cold is almost better because you don't know what you don't know, right? You don't know how tough those roots and rocks are going to be in Pennsylvania and up in the mountains and the whites and all that stuff in New England. You don't know what you don't know. Was it easier or harder this time knowing what you knew?
I think it was harder in many ways, in most ways, in fact, because I did know what to expect. But I can tell you, Glenn, the funny thing is, when I was dropped off at Springer Mountain the first time, this time rather, I felt immediately at home. I knew where I was. The first time I did it, I'd never done it, never hiked at all, never set up a tent at all. And so this time I was ready for it, and I felt very comfortable straight away. However, I was dreading the rocks in Pennsylvania. I was right to, because they suck in a big way. But then I knew how wonderful that the New Hampshire and Maine was going to be. So I was able to tell people that, you know, this is your highlight reel. As soon as you get into New Hampshire and then Maine, that's your highlight reel. And all the beautiful stuff you see up there. And so that part of it, I was glad about. I was surprisingly... I'd forgotten the context of a lot of places. I'd turn a corner and suddenly say, oh, I thought this was going to be in Virginia. You know, it was in North Carolina or something. I'd forgotten so many of the places in many ways, but this was lovely to get almost a refresher of what the trail is and where the different places are.
And that's interesting for you to say, because Jamie, he wrote two books about his first hike of the Appalachian Trail, which I read and were fascinating, and then has interviewed, 100 hikers who have done the AT and talked about these different places. So for you to do that, then everybody else is doing that too. I wanted to ask you, because everybody that hikes the Appalachian Trail says it's the people. They hands down, they all say the best thing about the Appalachian Trail is the people and, just the amazing people that you meet on the way. And you, after the first time, really talked about, and 95% of our listeners are women, so you really talked about the fact that there were so many women on your first hike. Were there more women even this hike than there were on your first hike?
Well, I think there were more women finished the first time. It's funny, actually, we talked about this before when I was on the trail with people. I think the registrations were about 75% men and 25% women in 2014, yet it finished. The people finished for about 50-50, because men are stupid. They take many more risks than women, and women are much more solid from the point of view of their dedication to doing it correctly. They don't run down ladders and things like that. You know, yeah, young guys injure themselves. This time, the registrations were nearer 60% men, 40% women.
Wow.
So there's definitely an uptick. However, I started a month earlier this time, so we remained ahead of the bubble of people. We noticed in the last few weeks more and more women were coming through. So the women obviously started later this year.
Well, that is amazing. I'm glad to see that. And you also, Jamie, you're going to love this. And Jamie's going to go, how the hell did they do that? Tell Jamie about the family you met at the end and then finished Friday with on Mount Katahdin.
Well, this family, he's actually, what's the word for it? Not a pastor, but he's a chaplain.
At a ski
resort. Him and his wife, they're hiking with three young children. And I found it tough enough myself, staying upright on the trail. And yet he's got to look after himself and his family. And then an eight-year-old boy called Destroyer, who was an awesome kid. And they just went the whole way. In fact, they did it in 5 months. They did it a month quicker than us because they were just super fit, super engaged, and wanted to be part of the whole Appalachian Trail journey.
And they were young the kids. Family. They were young. Right?
They had more than one child, three. And one was eight.
They had an eight-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 13-year-old. But there was another family, the Malones, who had a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old when she started. She's now six, and she finished as well. So she must be one of the youngest people to go, because you can't go above tree line on Mount Katahdin to the six, and she was six on the trail.
Oh my god. Okay, like my kid, I'm trying to get him off his tablet and then get him I'm so tired. Like, get up. This five-year-old hiked the Appalachian Trail. All right, thank you. Ammo right. For the rest of his life. If you don't get out of the house, I'm going to make you hike the trail.
That means you have to go yourself, Jimmy.
No, I'm going to send him with you.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, Steve, we have a couple listener questions, if you don't mind. So Kara wants to know, why did you do it twice? And I think you answered this. She wanted to know, is the trail culture, was it any different this time than the first time? We talked a little bit about that with the number of women, but.
Yeah. Well, the first noticeable thing, was when you go to a shelter, people would always check their data on their machine. On their phone. And if there was data at the shelter, the conversations were definitely quieter. And that's not a good thing. You know, I'm not decrying the availability of data, which is wider now than it was before. But really, the trail was about kind of getting away. And I feel very much now I've come back, I still have the same issues I had when I first came back. I feel I'm easing myself gently into the world, and it is a surprisingly scary place to be, the world. So why did I do it a second time? Why did I do it a second time? I thought, especially from my experience on my podcast, actually, Glenn, I thought that people, if I went for a second time, because everybody has a different journey, my journey would be different. I'm just a guy going again. I'd have different people. I'd have different views. For example, if I go to, because in the presidential range in New Hampshire, which is magnificent, by the way, I didn't see it at all the first time because it was socked in with cloud all the time. This time I had views for 100 miles. We just passed through on the perfect time. So I saw things this time that I didn't see, and vice versa. I didn't see things this time that I did see last time. So my journey felt entirely different.
That's interesting. Lindsay wants to know, or she just wanted to tell you that she didn't have any questions, but she wanted to let you know that you have tons of listeners on Horse Radio Network, and she followed the entire time and thanked you for doing the podcast. And I know you have a lot of listeners because I'm recording with you later. I'm going to interview you on your show, and you asked for your listeners to send me emails, and I'm not going to do that again because we have about 14 hours of questions. Susan wants to know, what do you recommend, and I wanted to add, there's a follow-up question to this. What do you recommend for soothing the aches and pains from exertion? She's 65, and when riding, she gets the aches and pains. What did you do anything different?
Nope. I didn't stretch, didn't warm up, I didn't prepare anything. I just got up every morning with the hiker hobble. It's a well-known condition we all have. And you're hobbling around, you put your feet and your socks and your shoes, and you think, I'm never going to be able to walk today. And then 10 minutes later, you're walking. I think it's one of those things you I think you've heard before on the show, Glenn, you get the physicality of hiking quite quickly. I'm incredibly fit now. For a 66-year-old, I'm incredibly fit. But I'm only fit for hiking. I'm not fit for anything else at all. I was flying up these mountains towards the end. Well, flying is a relative term, obviously. But I was moving pretty darn well towards the end. And my knees aren't bad. And yet, as I say, they creak a bit when I get up. But when I'm actually hiking, it's fine. So there's no real preparation. You do get aches and pains. I got them all the time. I've now done two full hikes, so 4,500 miles of the Appalachian Trail. I haven't ever had a single blister, and I haven't had any chafing at all, which most people say is the worst thing you can get. So I think I've just been lucky as far as that's concerned.
Did you see more? The Appalachian Trail has sometimes been known as a party trail with a lot of kids and 20-year-olds and things like that. Yet it seemed like, listening to your podcast this year, there are a lot more older people attempting it now.
There are. I think the trail is much more accessible now, partially because there's availability of much lighter gear. And the less weight you carry, almost obviously, is so much better. When I first hiked, I did it with a 42-pound pack. This time it's about 27 pounds. So 15 pounds off your back for 2,000 miles makes a lot of difference in your ability to do these things. So people have lightweight gear that enables them to hike that much more. And, and I love that. The older guys being out there, I did think of a book, something like why old guys rock the Appalachian Trail. And guys and gals, they're older women as well. So it's not just guys.
So, Andrea, one last question here. She says, she's a hiker. She says, what was his favorite meal that he made on the trail? She said, I love to make fancy, yummy recipes for my fiance to cook for me on the trail while he eats his Mountain House bags. And Mountain House is the dehydrated foods. And actually, I've tried them and they're pretty good. But what was your favorite meal?
Mountain House biscuits and gravy.
There you go.
I tell you, there's nothing better than pouring boiling water into a bag, closing the bag up, and going and just looking around and the coffee for about 5 minutes while it rehydrates, and then eating it. It's perfect. And I love the idea of cooking properly, because I can cook relatively properly, but I love the idea of doing it. But frankly, on the trail, you're so darn exhausted all the time that the thought process of getting garlic and frying it here and getting some onions and all that sort of stuff, it's a waste of time. You have a bag, pour boiling water into it and eat it. You just need the calories and eat as much Snickers as possible and peanut butter.
Snickers seems to be everybody's favorite choice on the trail. Five a day.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I used to have loads. Yeah, it was almost embarrassing at the end. In fact, I'm staying at a friend's house right now for a couple of weeks, so I take my apartment over. And he's got in his fridge. The only thing he had in his fridge was five Snickers. That's all he had in the fridge, and there's still five there. I haven't touched them yet. It's killing me though.
Now, you are also a big peanut butter fan. Are you sick of peanut butter now? You're never going to eat it again?
No, I love it even more. In fact, now I think that's one of the reasons I didn't lose quite as much weight, because I buy a jar of peanut butter and I eat the whole thing in 24 hours.
Wow.
And sometimes in just one sitting. But because I just love it. There's something about peanut butter. And that's also a thing that's driving me mad. I've got some peanut butter in the larder here, or pantry here. I might go have another piece now. Think about it.
Now I want Snickers peanut butter right now. I want to take a Snickers and dump it in peanut butter and eat it.
Perfect meal. Perfect meal.
And it's interesting because
perfectly balanced.
Jamie's a vegetarian, and there's more and more. It used to be that you never saw a vegetarian hike the trail because it was just too hard, I think. And now there's more and more vegetarian, even dehydrated meals. You see a lot more of that, and you're talking to a lot more people who are vegetarians hiking the trail.
Definitely. You know, we're living in a time when if you want to do something, the only reason not to do it is you. Now, if you're a vegan, I met several vegans on the trail. That must be tough. But they did it because there is availability of that food and they can make it work for them.
But they don't get Snickers.
No.
There is that. There's really no impediment to hiking the trail.
So you would say, bottom line here, if it's something you want to do, I know a lot of people save up for years because it is 6 months out of your life and you got to make that work. Just do it. Plan it.
Just you'll never ever regret it. You know, you may not be able to complete it, but if you do, let's say you do 300 miles or 400 or 500 miles, it will be a fabulous experience for you. You may hate it, of course, and if you hate it, fine, get off. Then nothing's lost apart from all the years of preparation. That's why I didn't prepare at all. I didn't want to lose anything.
All right.
There is actually a saying: when you know what you're going to hike the trail, you lay out all the gear you've got. Or you want to take, and you lay out the money you want to take half the gear and twice the money, because it does cost more than you'd think.
Well, especially I noticed that you may have stayed in a few more hotels on this trip than you did, and ate in a few more restaurants than you did the first time.
Oh, yeah.
You did my kind of trail. Yeah. If I could do that every night, I might consider it. It's like tent and camping thing.
You could. You definitely could.
All right, Steve. It's Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail is the name of the podcast. If you want to go back and listen, he recorded every night. And I have to tell you, after listening every week, as you know I do, boy, those last couple of episodes, you could hear how tired you were. You could just hear it.
I was.
Says the guy sitting in his pajamas in the living room.
I'm good. I got air conditioning and I sleep in my bed every night. I don't have to eat food out of a bag.
I'm sitting in a t-shirt and pajamas right now myself as well.
Well, you're a hero. Thank you so much, Mighty Blue.
You're
awesome.
We'll talk to you later in the day.
Love you, so
too. All right.
Thank you, buddy. Cheers. Bye.
Could you do it?
Would I do it?
Could you do
it? No.
I think we could do it. I mean, you have to be in the right frame of mind to commit to that.
Why the hell wouldn't you just ride? You know, I mean, I see people biking by all the time and I'm like, this is easier.
That whole sleeping in tents in the woods thing too.
We didn't get to it because there was a murder on the trail. Yeah. Did he pack some heat or was he prepared different?
No, he doesn't believe in guns at all. He's British.
Did he have any sort of self-defense, anything?
No, and that was a once in 30 year occurrence. You know, it's
Oh, just, there's bad people everywhere. Yeah. I mean, you're way more susceptible to that when you're just walking through the street.
I wanted to ask him, we didn't have time for that either. I wanted to ask him, a lot of hikers worry about bears and animals because the bears can come into your camp at night. You're in a tent. You know, there's nothing stopping a bear. And they actually put their food in bags and hang them from trees to keep them out of the way from bears and everything. So they do have animals they have to deal with, although he said he never saw a bear. So, but one of the things I would worry about is lightning. It's thunder and lightning. They get storms all the time. You're in the woods. You're under a tree and there's lightning hitting all around you and you're in a tent. So, I mean, that would be scarier to me, and probably you living it where you do now. I don't know. That would scare the crap out of me.
I think. All I know is I'm cheering him on from my pajamas, sitting on my couch, drinking wine.
Well, we have to go to our next guest in a couple of minutes. Do you have something quick we can do?
I have some equestrian first world problems.
Oh, we can do that.
You have to say that. First world problem. I'd like to remind you, if you have an equestrian problem, it is a first world problem. And these are problems that are submitted by our auditors. If you want to become an auditor, what do they need to do, Glenn?
All right. You just need to go to horseradionetwork.com. Scroll down on the right-hand side of the page. There is a banner that says HRN Auditor. Click that. And for as little as $1 a month, you too can join the party.
This is first world equestrian problems, not real problems. So I had to.
Yeah, there were a lot of real problems I saw in there.
I mean, you guys, here's your virtual hug right now. Hug. Okay. Now, for the rest of you. Chantel says, I try to be matchy-matchy, and as a dressage queen in training, this is like uber important, but now I have like 4 gray dressage pads and 3 gray ear bonnets, but they're all in different shades, and like trying to find darker charcoal pads and lighter gray bonnets is like so frustrating. Then she submitted a picture of a light gray pad and a dark gray bonnet. And it says, here's the picture to illustrate the difficulty of my existence. Ursina said, I have a show next week and I caved in and let my youth rider test out my gelding for the 2 English classes. And now she doesn't want to ride the horse she's been practicing with all summer because it turns out my horse is like a great jumper. My horse is like too good and everybody loves it. Lisa says, I want to be putting up some fences, but I have to work to afford my fences and I have to go get some hay before I can ride.
Yeah, that is a problem. You know, when we had the big barn, you just spent all your time working and fixing things and never got around to your own horse at all.
It's true. Baby Zara and Stan Lee I left the front doors open and they walked into the barn and they like tore everything off the walls and dumped the trash can and stuff. And I really want to get after the show, go out and ride, but I have to clean the barn.
Yeah, there you go.
Kara says, my horse is too fat to ride. Send some of that over to Baby Groot. Mary says that there aren't
I have a pony
many.
Like that too, by the way.
Yeah. You like that. There aren't very many clinics and activities around here, but now there's a cow sorting clinic and a Western dressage schooling show on the same weekend. Oh, what are you going to do, Mary? The choices. Alexis says, last week, I got ready for our only event of the year, and I did my best ever forelock braid. But then the event was canceled, and nobody got to see the braid.
She doesn't care about not going. Just nobody saw her showing.
Nobody saw my awesome forelock braid, which, by the way, those are like impossible to do. I don't ever braid forelocks because I would rather not tear out my horse's hair in frustration. TJ says, the weather is so nice here that I've been riding 2 horses every day for the past few days, but now I'm so sore. In the same vein, Carrie says, I got a tattoo on Saturday and was too sore to ride yesterday.
I saw that tattoo. Did you see? I think it was her that posted a picture of the horsey one. Was it her?
I don't know. I that's a different segment. I didn't get to check the auditor's page all weekend.
I think she had a really neat horsey one, but it was on her arm, I think, so I don't know why you couldn't rode. That's just laziness, I think.
Man up, Carrie. Jeez. Heard it from Glenn. Get out there and ride.
Get out there.
She probably
got
a tattoo on her ass.
Look at Steve. He's 66, just hiked 2,200 miles. I mean,
I know. There's really no excuse anymore.
I'm going to use that all the time. I don't feel like actually going outside.
I'm
going to
tell Lucas, if you don't get outside right now, you're going to go hike the Appalachian Trail with Steve.
Can you imagine taking 3 kids like Lucas on the Appalachian Trail? No. I mean, you're hiking on the sides of mountains.
Why would you? Never mind.
Be tough kids.
Lindsay says, I traveled a lot this summer, and when I wasn't traveling, I was like majorly kicking butt at my job, and I'm getting a promotion, but now I'm so behind on all the podcasts. Gotta get your priorities straight.
Come on, priorities. Yes.
This is kind of a long one. Alicia says, I'm going back to school today after a 4-year gap, and I have no idea what to wear. I've spent the last 4 years pretty much in barn clothes, and I have no idea how kids my age dress anymore these days. And I normally like to dress nice, but like, I know other kids just like roll out of bed and wear their PJs to class, but I'm not about that life. So what should I wear? Okay. I can tell you what they wear at Oklahoma. It's summertime. And school just started back in, and Chad and I went to, we live like near OU. So we went in to get lunch. And in the wintertime, we noticed that everybody had oversized hoodies on with yoga pants. And now everybody has massively oversized t-shirts with short shorts. So it looks like they're just walking around with no pants on. Yeah. And everybody was dressed like that. It was weird.
Can I just make a comment about that fashion trend? Short shorts are back. If you remember, was it the 80s that short shorts were in? I mean, really in?
Are they super high-waisted? Because then yes.
Yeah, and you notice high-waisted's coming back again, too. So,
which it doesn't look good on anybody.
I agree.
Except for Marissa Tomei in Spider-Man. She's the only one who can pull it off.
But I am really excited about short shorts coming back. Just want to throw that out there. That beats my approval. I'm just saying.
You should reconsider that. Walk around the college campus.
One more, and then we got a caller guest.
That's it? That's okay. Let me see. You're so mean. Okay, Teresa says, my horse is behaving really, really well lately, and she's like being so cooperative. But now I'm overwhelmed by all the things I want to do with her, and I can't decide what to do every time I ride her because she's like perfect at everything. Oh,
okay, half God. The audience hates her.
Yeah, I mean, that's me. I hate you. So, Katie, just real quick, her teenage daughter has been wanting to ride in the saddle that she uses, and she has to drop the stirrup 6 holes every time she rides in it, or she has to put them up 6 holes. Her daughter's that much taller than her. That sucks, because everybody hates readjusting the stirrups when you get back on. It's like, it's my saddle. You should put the stirrups back yourself.
All right, let's get our guest on. We're meeting Deanne Long Sloan. She's the new managing editor of HorseNation.com. Because if you remember right, when Leslie was on a couple of weeks ago, Leslie Wiley, who stopped by here every day every Monday for 10 years, she's been moving over to Eventing Nation. And Leslie said she'd still join us about once a month, so we'll get her on. But we wanted to meet the new boss over at Horse Nation. And let's give Deanne a call and see if we can get her on. She did say she's going to be driving right now. Apparently, she had an emergency and was on her way somewhere. Is this the
hello?
Hello, how are you?
Yes, this is she. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Well, welcome to the show. And it's so weird that for 10 years we've been having the managing editor of Horse Nation come on the show every Monday.
No pressure.
No pressure. Yes.
No pressure whatsoever. Awesome.
So first of all, I have a little note here that, sent by a birdie that says you're a connoisseur of fine wine and thoroughbreds, a small child wrangler, and you're a Western thoroughbred rider and trainer.
Trainer might be a stretch, but sure.
Does the wine come before the training or after?
Probably depends on the day, but usually to be safest, I would say after.
No, the wine comes with the child wrangling.
Oh, that's
wine does come with the child wrangling.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Deanne. We need to get to know you.
Well, so I am originally from Southern California, but now I live in Western Pennsylvania. Go figure.
Why?
Probably not.
Sorry.
Yeah, right?
Carry on.
That's the obvious question. I went to college in central Pennsylvania and met my now husband there. And apparently people who are from Pittsburgh are people who stay in Pittsburgh. So here we are.
Yep.
Yep. That's right. And where'd you go to school, by the way? Where did you go to college?
Like, it's Bucknell University.
Oh, Bucknell. Okay. Just curious.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say, that's not to disparage Pittsburgh at all. It's a lovely city and there's a reason people stay, but they definitely stay there.
So you're into Western riding. Why did Western and thoroughbreds come together? How did that happen?
One of my good friends who manages our barn, she is a professional trainer, And she decided to do the Retired Racehorse Project Thoroughbred Makeover, I want to say in 2015. Let's go with that. I think it was 2015. And she had this thoroughbred that I think we all in the barn just fell in love with. Her name was Diabolic. She was this great kind of goofy filly, about 15'2", really stocky, built a lot more like a quarter horse, or, you know, like an older line thoroughbred. And we just sort of loved her. And I thought, you know, I've always kind of liked thoroughbreds, but when I first got into horses as an adult, you listen to people who tell you, no, 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 don't do that. And so I didn't. But then after meeting Diabolic, I went, you know what? I think I want my next horse to be a thoroughbred. And we called her Di. She excelled in barrels and was a great little Western, pretty handy horse. So that got me started in thoroughbreds.
I see a future guest on your other show there, Jamie.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So, so you are into thoroughbreds. Did you take Di or did you go get another one? I'm sorry, I missed that.
I didn't buy her, although she ended up being for sale. And at the time, she was more than I was willing to spend on a horse. And I remember thinking, like, oh, if I had the cash, this would be my horse. But I didn't at the time. So I got another one who was a great mare, but I'm, as I get older, I'm trying to be a lot more honest with myself. And I had a horse that really was too much for me, which had nothing to do with her breed. It was just simply that she was a lot of horse and that was not a good fit for me. So I sold her. She ended up going to a jumping home and she's doing well. But then after that, I got the mare I have now, who's, just a lot more quiet and a much more even temperament, and so she's a great fit.
It's interesting that we're talking about thoroughbreds because there was just an article on Horse Nation about the seven myths about off-the-track thoroughbreds that shouldn't
Correct.
Be. And one of a couple of these were thoroughbreds are difficult to handle, and you know, any breed, some horses are difficult to handle. I mean, that doesn't matter the breed, right?
Right.
And then they can't perform as at a high level as other breeds. Well, that's been proven wrong in many different disciplines.
Where did you read this, Glenn?
It's on Horse Nation. It's Let's Discuss Seven Myths About Off-the-Track Thoroughbreds That Shouldn't Be. Right. So one of them is they're difficult to handle. And, you know, some are. I mean, some of any breed are difficult to handle.
Thoroughbreds are not difficult to handle. Let me tell you why they get that rep is because they're sensitive and people have bad timing and are bad. They don't always know what they're saying to the horse with their body language. They don't always know what they're doing. And so, you know, yes, a horse is going to be difficult to handle whether or not it's trained correctly or not. You know, Groot was very difficult to handle. You know, you couldn't pick up his feet. The first time the farrier trimmed him, you picked up his foot and he fell over. Well, it turns out he's been drugged every time he got his feet done. I found out from the former trainer. And it's like, he wasn't difficult to handle because he was a thoroughbred. He was difficult to handle because somebody did not train him or trained him poorly. And so they defaulted to drugging him to put him in trailers and to pick up his feet. So yes, he was a thoroughbred that was difficult to handle, but it was not his fault. And that has nothing to do with the breed. You can do that with a quarter horse. You can do that with any type, a warm blood, any type of breed. So yes, I agree that is a very inappropriate statement for the thoroughbred. It's not fair.
Well, I agree with that too. And I actually think having seen, so the same trainer who had Di, she's had a number of thoroughbreds through our barn that she's worked with and has retrained for second disciplines. And I have to say that with there might have been the rare exception, but most of them came to us with better ground manners and better, this is not really a word, but we'll go with it, better like handleability than some of the other training horses she had in. And part of that was because being on the track, so many different people handled them. And if they had a somewhat decent trainer, they didn't put up with poor manners for the farrier. They didn't put up with a horse not loading because that was all part of life on the track.
Yeah. It just depends on who's got their hands on them, you know, and when. So
yeah, that's. I love this.
A bad trainer can ruin any breed of horse.
I love this. Amen, sister. I love this one. Thoroughbreds are spooky. Have you ever met a Hackney pony? For God's sake, talking about spooky. Again, that comes back to training and desensitization, too. If they're never exposed to anything, you're going to be spooky.
Yeah, yeah. Take baby Zara somewhere. See how that goes. She hasn't been anywhere.
So how many kids do you have, small child wrangler?
I have three. My oldest is 7. And if you are getting some background noise, it is because I've got my 4-year-old twins with me.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, bless you.
So that's where small child wrangler comes from.
Yeah, I can see that. How is it having twins anyway?
4 is better than 3. 3 was better than 2. How's that? The more independent they become, I think kind of the easy is the wrong word, but for lack of a better term, the easier it becomes.
No, I'm telling you what, I think every single day, my son is now 6, and every day is easier because there's less that they require of you in the way of like this morning, for the first time ever, Lucas got himself dressed and put his shoes on. I was like, what?
Excellent.
Oh my God. Yes. And some people might mourn the days gone by where their child, they needed them to dress. I don't. No, it's great, buddy.
I am so with you on that. And especially too, with there being like 2 of them, that we're in a 3-story house. Essentially, there are a lot of stairs. I feel like as they get older, you know, I'm less concerned about their, you know, about them falling down the stairs or all the things that come with having an 18-month-old or a 2-year-old they're, you know, not stair safe and might just spontaneously die at any moment.
Now, Deanne, do you agree with me that the first birthday party for a child, it should not be for the child. It should be for the mother, because you kept that child alive that whole first year. It should be for you. Well, it should be drinking and partying and all sorts of stuff.
Well, and absolutely, 100%, I think at least among my group of friends, that's what it's been, right? Because it's mostly adults, because the kids don't really know what's going on. And we usually have alcohol there, you know, we get some entertainment out of them smashing their faces in the cake, but it is absolutely for the parents and for the people who have kept them alive for that first year.
Yeah.
Are they identical twins?
No, they're boy-girl twins, so they're paternal.
All right, I didn't know you had to do the dress them alike thing.
Oh God, don't do that.
Oh, no, and I'm not nearly coordinated enough for that. Like, the people who have their lives together enough to manage that, good on them. It's a good day if my kids are in clean clothes.
Dude, if he has 2 socks on that look relatively close to each other, I'm like, it's a win. So
exactly.
Just so you know, I am a boy-girl twin set. I have a twin brother.
Oh.
So if you have any questions, you just holler at me.
I forgot.
You make
that.
A list for next time you come
that.
On.
Horses in the morning, what to do with twins.
That's right. Yeah.
No, not foals.
No. What not to do with twins. Write down your questions. And we'll go over them next week.
Funny, when I was pregnant with them, I was out meeting the vet at the barn, and I was pretty noticeably pregnant. And she, you know, was chatting with me and asking like the obligatory, I'm talking to a pregnant woman question, you know, how far along are you, blah, blah, blah. And I say, I'm pregnant with twins. And when she finds out that they're fraternal, and this might be too much information, but out of the same ovary, my vet got so excited and she goes, you're a super ovulator. She goes, if you were a dairy cow, you'd go for top dollar.
Yes.
<That's funny>.
So I took it as a compliment coming from her.
Glenn, I officially think we can keep her.
Yeah, we can keep Deanne. She fits right in. So I have Deanne, I have an article I want you to do, and I've been wondering about this, and you guys just talked about this. So right now I'm seeing all of my friends that aren't horse people bringing their kids to college and having total meltdowns about the whole empty nest thing. And then I see all of my friends that are horse people bringing their kids to college don't seem to be having any meltdowns at all. So is that a thing, or am I right? That's not a scientific study, but I kind of think that's a thing.
I think you're right. I think that is a thing, because once you drop the kids off, now that's more time for your horse, right?
Right. I think that the people who are having meltdowns just don't have a life other than their kids, and horse women are like, shit, I can go out with spend time with my horse every day now.
You drop the S word.
And I don't have to cook anyone dinner.
That's right.
Yeah.
Jamie, yours is moving out to 30, so you got a long time to wait.
That's okay. Lucas told me he's going to go to college at OU, and I was like, great, buddy, you'll be down the street. And he was like, and you're coming with me, right? I was like, what? He's like, yeah, you're coming to college with me, Mom. I was like, Okay, buddy. I said, you know
my
what?
If
you
go to,
I told him, I said, if you go to college by yourself, I'll buy you a car.
Well done. Well done.
Here's
my
4-year-old
daughter likes to tell me that she's never getting married because she doesn't want to leave me.
Oh, and you love them, but you're like, oh, God, please
that'll
tell me
change. When
true.
They get to be 13, well, they'll have nothing to do with you again. So,
yeah. Right,
change.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you're driving someplace. We appreciate you stopping by, and we'll have you back again.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks for having me.
HorseNation.com.
Smooch babies for us. Yeah, HorseNation.com. Smooching babies.
All right, bye.
Can you imagine having... Oh, you would have never done this show if you had had twins.
Glenn, I'll tell you what. When I went in for my first ultrasound, because I am a twin, there was concern that I would also have twins. And I laid down on the table and they were like, okay, well, here it is. And I'm like, how many are there? Please tell me there's a... like, we only see one heartbeat. I was like, really?
Thank God.
I just knew there was going to be twins. And you can't pinch them in the human world. Oh, God.
Yes, that would have been different. Boy, can you imagine? Oh, that's got to be tough. Double the
you
sets
know,
of everything.
I
diapers.
Full,
and diapers.
I full realize why my mom is so crazy. Like, I get it. Mom, like, Mama, I get it. I did it to you. We did it to you.
And you
Sorry.
Were both pretty strong personalities.
And I have a brother who's 19 months older than me. So she had three, like, under two.
Very strong personalities. There wasn't any wallflowers in that group. So that's got to be tough.
I think we've scared our older brother into being quiet. But my twin brother and I are a mess.
Did we have him on the show once?
No, he's never been on the show. Absolutely not. That will never happen. I'll tell you why.
I'm going to find his name.
There is no chance of him not dropping the F-bomb about 47 times. No chance. It just not going to happen.
I'll record it. We'll record the interview. We had, though, I've surprised you with a couple people over the years.
Like who?
The musician girl that you used to perform with. Remember?
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
tell you she was coming on and we got her on.
Yeah.
She was so, and she still performs, I think.
I think so, yeah. Lindsay Rakers, yep.
Yeah, that's right, Lindsay Rakers. We played her music. I got to dig some of her music out. Yeah, so I think there were a couple people I've surprised you with over
Can we
years.
Go now before you continue to brainstorm?
All right, cross the brother off. Can't have him on live.
I'm doing a favor for you, okay? I'm doing you a favor.
What did we learn today?
Let's see. What did you learn today? I learned that I should never gamble on horse races, starting with that. I learned that I'm never going to, hike the Appalachian Trail. And, I found a new friend in Deanne.
I learned that, you know, I'm 57. He's 66 and hiked the Appalachian Trail. My life isn't over yet. I still have hope. He has just given everybody that's in their 50s and early 60s hope. There was a woman that was hiking it this year, I think that was like 78. Can you imagine that? Anyway, so that's what I learned today. There's still hope.
There's still hope. You can still live your life, Glenn.
Tomorrow's the Western episode with Tara. She'll be here. And then Jamie will be back on Wednesday. Later in the week, we have, I think, Horse Husbands. We have Horse Husbands later in the week, too. And for all of you wives whose husbands play golf, they're going to want to listen to this episode because we're going to be talking golf this week.
Oh, Lord. Are you talking? Are you having Chad on?
No, but we're having a guy who does a podcast about golf and also a TV show about golf is coming on to talk to us. I said, you know what? We've been talking too many horses on the Horse Husband episode. We need to start talking about other things. So,
Glenn, how exactly are you going to find common ground to talk to a man about golf? You don't play golf.
I used to play golf very badly for years. I played golf. I have more bad golf stories than most people.
You can make the senior tour. Mighty Blue has given you hope. You start golfing again.
I was terrible. I don't think I ever broke 100 in my lifetime.
That's really bad.
I know. That's why I quit playing golf.
I could throw it and break 100.
I could have thrown it and broke 100. It's that damn club that kept getting in the way. Yeah, didn't do so well at golf. But anyway, so Chad can listen to this month's Horse Husband episode.
If you need any help or any questions, just email him and he'll help you out.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again tomorrow.
All right. Spay, neuter, geld. Have a good one.